get them out the door, and then we'll do the hearing. Is that all right? Okay.
So it's the
House Committee on Revenue for Thursday, February 23rd, 2017 will come to order. Colleagues, I want to reverse the order of things today, and instead of starting with the public hearing, which it looks like it may take a while, I want to start with the work sessions, and I think that's Chris. So we'll open the work session on House Bill 2273. Chris can remind us what that bill is about, and we can go from there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Both of the bills come from the Department of Revenue, and they adopt suggested MTC language. That's the Multi-State Tax Commission. 2273 adds language to current statute that allows corporations and the Department of Revenue to agree on an alternate apportionment method. As you may recall, almost all corporations apportion their sales via the single sales factor. If a corporation feels that that doesn't accurately reflect their business income in the state, they can reach out to the Department of Revenue and they can engage in a conversation and agree to an alternate method. This language that's in 2273 just strengthens that process. It adds suggested language by the Multi-State Tax Commission. You do have the paperwork, and it's both a minimal impact for the fiscal and the revenue.
Great. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2273 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2273 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. And Representative Benz has agreed to carry, so we can close the work session on House Bill 2273 and open a work session on House Bill 2275. That's also yours, isn't it?
It is. And it is also suggested language from the Multi-State Tax Commission. It's a DOR bill. As you recall from some of the orientation, income from corporations falls into one of two pots. It's either allocated income or apportioned income. Most of the income is apportioned income, and that's basically the business income that gets apportioned to all of the states. And allocated income is income that is attributable to a very specific site or state. And so that is not being changed. But what is being changed and modified is the term business income is being changed to apportionable income, just to clarify that that's basically what it is, and it adopts the language suggested by the Multi-State Tax Commission. And you have the paperwork on this, and it is also a minimal impact for the fiscal and the revenue.
Great. So it's ready for the floor if the committee decides to send it there. Representative Vance?
Chair, I move House Bill 2275 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Vance moves House Bill 2275 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Vance, please.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Chris for coming up to my office and explaining these two to me. It only took about 2.5 hours, but I now think I understand the bill.
Thank you. That's a great piece of work that Chris engaged in.
It was.
Yes. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? No objection to the motion. Motion carries. Representative Smith-Warner, will you carry this bill?
I would be happy to, sir.
Representative Smith-Warner will carry. You, of course, may also take your 2.5 hours to consult if you need to.
Lucky Chris.
And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2275. And we're going to open the public hearing on both of these bills together because they're closely related bills, and Kyle will explain them. So we're opening a public hearing on House Bill 2770 and House Bill 2063.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And yes, House Bills 2770 and 2063 do both relate to an existing property tax exemption that came into effect in the 2015 session related to Senate Bill 611. The committee heard a little bit about this in the report received from the Public Utility Commission earlier this session, so it's a continuation in some ways of that discussion. I'll start with House Bill 2063 and the changes it makes and then go into 2770, as 2770 is a repeal of the new exemption that was made available. But so House Bill 2063, so just as a reminder, the exemption that is being discussed in these two bills is commonly referred to as the gigabit exemption. So this is for property of centrally assessed companies that build, maintain, and operate a qualified communication project. So that'd be a project that provides more or less gigabit symmetrical service to customers here in Oregon, to a majority of a communication company's customers. So there are requirements existing now for the exemption. They're included in the background of the SMS in both House Bill 2063 or 2770. It's the same background in the two bullet points there. What 2063 would do is it would add additional requirements for that gigabit project to qualify for the exemption. So those additional requirements, the first, I guess I'll try to step through them one at a time. There's specified requirements. The first is a minimum, and I should note that in the measure, you'll see a number of blanks. So the requirements are set in place, or the structure of them, and then there's a blank for the actual value that'll go in there. So that would be up to the committee to determine where those would be. But so the first requirement would be a minimum historical cost of the newly constructed or installed property, so a minimum investment, if you will. It goes on to include a maximum monthly charge for the service and a maximum initial fee. So that would be something like an installation fee of the service, and that would be a percentage of the monthly fee that's allowed. So both of those, again, are blanks to be filled in. It would index the monthly fee that is allowed to be charged. The monthly limit fee would be indexed to the average consumer price index in years going forward. As a secondary requirement, for companies where a majority of the company's residential broadband customers reside within the Portland, Salem, and Eugene MSAs, it would require those companies to offer the symmetrical gigabit service to a majority of the company's residential broadband customers residing outside of those MSAs. So to be a qualified project under existing law, the project needs to be built out to a majority of the broadband customers. Now, if most of your broadband customers are in the Portland, Salem, or Eugene MSAs, you then are required to build out to the customers outside of those three MSAs to a majority of those as well. So that gives a little bit of a rural component, if you will, if you consider rural outside of those three MSAs. And I think that covers, for the most part, the changes in House Bill 2063. House Bill 2770, again, is just it's a full repeal of the gigabit exemption. Mm-hmm. And it would be effective beginning with the 2015-16 property tax year. So that would be more or less removing the provisions in law as if they didn't occur. So they do go back a year and pull them out.
So it's retro? I'm sorry.
It is, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't affect anything else in Senate Bill 611 from that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. There were a number of other provisions.
The other provisions are left alone.
And there's a bit of conforming language you'll see in House Bill 2770 that has to take out those linkages of how they intertwine in some cases with the other exemptions that were made available.
Representative Nose.
I just want to make sure I'm tracking, because I've found this, understanding this to be difficult, so maybe people are going to get up and explain it to us. But so it's repeal with retro for 2770, and the only change we're making to Senate Bill 611 is the gigabyte exemption. So the way we treat intangibles, the three exemptions that were put in place by 611, the sort of rationalizing that occurred around how we would do their central, all that remains in place. This is, the repeal is just literally that gigabyte exemption.
Right, and yes, and the other piece of it that you didn't mention was the data center property tax issue.
Right.
That also is not affected by this bill.
One other follow-up,
please,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah?
So with repeal, and maybe there's going to be witnesses that are going to come up and explain this, have there been entities that have been able to take advantage of that mm-hmm. property tax exemption, and would they be required to repay?
That's a great question, and we can ask for information on that.
Fair enough.
It's my understanding that nobody's actually
gotten
received the tax break yet.
Okay.
But that we'll find out as we go through, I think.
Right on.
All right. I've got a long list of people. We have now an hour and a half for this. So I'm going to try to go through them and ask people to be as succinct as reasonably possible so we can get everybody in today. Let's start with Wendy Johnson and Dan Eisenbeis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. As Representative Noh said, this is a pretty complicated area. So I thought it would be best to sort of give you the big picture of central assessment and then gigabit how it is within central assessment. I'll try to be as brief as I can, but I think it helps to get that big picture to understand exactly what the policy issue is that you have before you today. First, just the basic who cares about this issue? It's all property tax revenue recipients, schools, counties, cities, and special districts. That's who receives property tax dollars. I haven't talked to you on any property tax bills yet, so I'm taking this opportunity to say the basic format is, as you should know for your own residences, is you take the value of your property times the tax rate, and that's going to be the tax. And there's exemptions that are taken out. Unlike income tax, where we talk about credits, with property taxes, it's exemptions. So it's the value of your property minus any exemptions times the tax rate. So that's where we start. What's taxed? First, real property. That's for both residential property and businesses. They're taxed on their real property. And by that, I mean the land and buildings and structures. That's what everybody's taxed on, both residential or business. Then there's what's called real property for businesses. That's the machinery and equipment that's affixed. That's also considered real property. It's just a different type. It's the structures that are affixed, the equipment. Then there's personal property, and that's the stuff that moves around, but this is only businesses. We're not taxed in the stuff that's in our homes, but businesses are taxed on what's inside their business. And then there's the last category, which is the category for today, intangible property. The only entities that are taxed on intangibles are centrally assessed businesses, and those are defined by statute. And they are the type that you heard some from the PUC discussion, that it's the parts that make the value, really. And so it's railroad companies, communication companies, utilities that they're crossing county lines generally, too. So you don't want each county to be assessing. It's assessed centrally by the Department of Revenue. That's why it's called central assessment. But the reason is it's because of the type of business it is to capture the value. It's centrally assessed. And for those businesses, we tax the intangibles. And that means it's something you can't touch. So the examples are your contract values, your goodwill, your patents. You'll see today your franchise agreement values, your FCC license values, those types of things that you need to have that business work. So that's the focus for today. So here's this timeline of central assessed property in Oregon. It goes clear back to 1909, when most states dealt with the same issue and how to value. And we call it the unit taxing system. So we've had it clear back since 1909. Then in 1951, as we're codifying Oregon's law and making it into the Oregon revised statutes, that's the starting point, really, of the ORS provisions on central assessment. And then there are other changes, obviously, in between. I'm just highlighting the big ones. In 1973, we added this concept of data transmission services. Okay, the internet wasn't around yet, but data transmission was. And so that's sort of the precursor to some of the technology we have today. And then in 2009-10, that fiscal year, the Department of Revenue started essentially assessing Comcast and other cable companies. Other telephone companies and such had been centrally assessed prior to that, but this is the first time you had the cable companies. So then this slide is some of the litigation explanation. The Comcast contested that assessment of Comcast, challenging that they weren't subject to central assessment, and therefore they weren't subject to intangible property being taxed. That went to the tax court and first. That's how those cases move. So in 2011, the tax court made a split decision, in part saying the internet service was covered by central assessment, but the cable service wasn't. And because the cable part was their primary part of the business, it wasn't subject to central assessment, was that decision. The Department of Revenue appealed, and in 2014, the basic gist of that case was the Supreme Court reversed and said, no, cable service is also a communications service as that statute is interpreted. And so because both internet and cable services are communication companies and data transmission, the company is subject to central assessment. So that was in October of 2014. That case went back to the tax court to figure out the other issues in the case, including the tax bill. So in the 15 session, just weeks or weeks and months later, what emerged was this was a large tax increase to the cable companies. So Senate Bill 611 was introduced in the Senate, and it moved through very quickly. The reason I have the April 2nd date there is you can understand for that to pass both chambers and be signed by the governor in April, it went through quite quickly. It became effective in October, you know, that's the months after the signing. And then we began a long rulemaking process of trying to put the details on the law because it had lots of gaps. And that was left to the PUC. And the league was engaged in that discussion along with a lot of other stakeholders. Then in July, and the way you've heard from the PUC, you have to do an application through the PUC, and then a determination goes from the PUC, and it's forwarded to the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue makes the exemption decision. So in July of 2016, the Department of Revenue determined that no communication company was eligible for the exemption. That decision was appealed by Comcast and went through the administrative process, and that was exhausted and then went on to the tax court. So that's where the case is right now, and it's only on the gigabit portion. So we have two cases essentially pending. We have both the original Supreme Court case that's back at the tax court, and then we have the second case that's on the gigabit exemption. So we have two pending. So some of my remarks will be short in that the league is involved with that litigation, so I can't really testify on some of the details of our arguments with that case. So then we have the exemptions from Senate Bill 611 and existing law that I want to explain. First, we've had an exemption for FCC licenses since 2001. This applies to some of the wireless companies and those communications companies that need an FCC license to operate. And you will see that I provided another document online for you to see what the value of the FCC license was. It's in the tax expenditure report that you receive. And it was over $23 million is the value of that exemption for the 15-17 biennium. So it's a large, the value of having that property exempt from these communications companies is quite large. Then with Senate Bill 611, other additional exemptions were provided. The first is the largest one, the franchise agreement value. And this was for cable companies because cable companies don't have the FCC license. They have another large asset is this franchise agreement. So we exempted that value. And this is an important thing to understand because it was the closest thing we could find that was of similar value to the FCC license to put companies in parity. And so you'll see online as the new tax expenditure report, it's number 2.104. The value of all these communication exemptions has now gone to $42 million. So it includes both franchises and the FCC licenses. So it essentially did double. So it's an aggregate number. So we can estimate then that the value of the franchise agreement was over $20 million because of that change. Even though it's not spelled out in the report, you can generally guess that that's about that, although I can't give the specifics because they're all rolled in together. There's another exemption for those cable companies that use satellites rather than the cables. And so there's another one that's for satellite values plus the FCC license value because they work together. And these are all, you get the largest one of them. You don't get all of them. So a business would get whichever was the largest exemption. So each of these latter two were new in Senate Bill 611. Then there was another provision that applies not just to communications companies, but all centrally assessed companies, that there's now a cap in Oregon on your intangibles. So it's 130% of historic cost. So even though that you have these other exemption options, this one can also be used as an alternative, so that we do have a cap. And then we have these two other ones that are not partial exemptions. They're just subject, it's not an exemption at all. It's that data centers aren't subject to central assessment at all unless they happen to fit into a type where they're doing other things besides the data center, and then they would be centrally assessed. And I have the word clarifications there because there was legislation in the previous sessions on it. So there was a data center piece in Senate Bill 611, but it had been existing as well. And then the last one there, a new exemption was put in for businesses that receive a gigabit exemption. It's a complicated formula, but as the legislative revenue staff summary explains, essentially it makes your intangibles not taxable at all, or it can, it just depends on what the value is, but it can be up to making them not taxable at all. And so it's a very large exemption if you get the gigabit exemption. So of course, today's the focus is on that gigabit exemption. The reason this new gigabit exemption was written, instead of doing a specific piece of property or something, it was for a variety, for a whole list of justifications, and I've tried to come up with what we heard in testimony and discussions. The big reason was that it was to provide gigabit service, fiber optic service, at speeds of a gigabit was a very expensive technology in 2015. We didn't have it in the state that was accessible to the public or businesses, and it was something we really wanted in the state. And the cost to provide it was high. And the company that had it, Google Fiber, had a large, their property was largely intangible. And so not only was the technology expensive, but that the assets they had were largely intangible. So if they wanted to come to Oregon and Oregon was taxing intangible property, it was cost prohibitive. So that the second one of the company was Google, and had a large intangible property list. But we really saw broadband service and gigabit service in particular as an economic development infrastructure piece that was wanted and desired throughout the whole state. And that throughout the state is important because we wanted it to not just happen in the natural business model competition of course, where it's heavily populated, but we wanted it around the state. A great example is from the city of John Day. The city manager there tells me that they have industrial property ready to go, shovel ready, but they have no broadband in the city. But Senate Bill 611 did not help them get it, and they still don't have gigabit speed out there, and they won't, because the incentive just wasn't written really to help rural Oregon as much as we would have liked. So I want it made clear that we think having service throughout the state is an important goal, and it is something we want for economic development. It's just the tool that was written doesn't work, and I'll continue to explain why. Lastly, the last bullet point there is that the reason justified for providing this new gigabit exemption in Senate Bill 611 was that without providing an exemption, we weren't going to get the company here. It was supposedly met the but-for test, that if we didn't do it, we weren't going to get them here. So in other words, the exemption was justified because the value of the service was so high that it was supposed to outweigh the revenue loss. So those were the reasons the gigabit exemption was written. Unfortunately, the justifications turned out to not be true, and we're not getting, these justifications aren't really the reality. It hasn't worked. The technology and costs have changed a lot since 2015. Google has not come and has made it clear in all press accounts that they're not planning to come because, one, their technology has changed and is still changing. And so the goal of bringing this service using the fiber optic type service that Google offered was not possible, even with the exemption. Secondly, the intent of the legislature was to incentivize services that would not have been done but for the exemption. Instead, we're seeing other companies use it in a way that was never intended. I mean, your goal was to get it out across the state, and this incentive is now being interpreted in ways that would not meet that goal. it was written to cover existing companies, and we don't dispute that. But it was with the understanding that the existing companies would also need to spend a lot of money to make that infrastructure work for their business models. And it turns out, as the technology has changed for Google, it has also changed for the other existing companies. And it just is, the cost is not what we anticipated, nor is the services that are being offered what was anticipated for the revenue loss. And lastly, as I explained all the other exemptions, this gigabit exemption would upset that balance of trying to provide parity with all the existing companies and different types of service methods. And so for those reasons, you have the two bills before you today. One would try to make changes to improve upon the gigabit exemption, and that's the second, House Bill 2770 would outright repeal that gigabit exemption. Because technology has changed, we don't think it's worth trying to change the existing gigabit exemption. It doesn't work, and so we would recommend moving House Bill 2770 to just repeal it altogether. And Mr. Chair, I remember you talking earlier in the session about the need to provide incentives for broadband services across the state. We'd encourage you to continue in that route, but this method doesn't seem to be the method to do that. And we'd be looking to other ways to provide that as an incentive. Again, I did provide the numbers from the tax expenditure reports that they're online for you on OLIS, but that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great. Let's hear from City of Portland, and then we'll do that.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Dan Eisenbeis with the City of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today. Want to applaud the committee for taking the time to revisit the gigabit exemption in light of how circumstances have been evolving. And would like to urge you to support House Bill 2770 to repeal the gigabit exemption. Initially, the legislature made a policy choice to provide this exemption to incentivize companies to build out fiber optic networks to provide gigabit service, or for existing companies to upgrade a majority of their customers to gigabit service, while also not discriminating based on income. As Wendy noted, we have seen substantial changes in the technological model that parts of the industry are using since the original gigabit exemption was put in place. Google announced that they were pausing their rollout of Google Fiber, and around the same time they announced that they had acquired a company called WebPass that had technology for providing high-speed internet using point-to-point broadcast antennas. They have begun rolling out gigabit service using that technological model, which has inherently lower costs than installing fiber. And just yesterday, there was an article on the Ars Technica website announcing that Google is deploying that service in both Seattle and Denver. There are some other cities where that is being discussed that are referenced in written testimony you have on OLIS from Ann Goldenberg, who is the division manager for the Portland Office for Community Technology. We've also seen that even though this exemption has not been provided to any companies, that it could, if it stays on the books, certainly benefit from some clarification. Especially in regards to not discriminating based on income. The appeal that's underway involves a service that is only available at a very high price. We don't think that that meets the intent of the original legislation authorizing this. That said, certainly our preference at this point, given the circumstances, would be a full repeal of the gigabit exemption. Happy to answer any questions, and thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Bueller.
Thanks, Chair Barnhart. Is the gigabit technology still something that would add benefit to the citizens of Oregon?
So, Chair Barnhart, Rep. Bueller, yes, it certainly provides benefit to the citizens of Oregon. I think from the city of Portland's perspective. However, because of the change in technology and the cost of deployment, it's no longer prudent to offer the tax incentive to do that.
Well, and why not? If it's beneficial and there's a high investment cost, and just less than 2 years ago this body thought it was worth the investment, why the change in expectations now?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, I think it's more a matter of the potential amount of foregone revenue compared to the cost of deploying the service and the benefit. And the potential amount of foregone revenue is quite substantial.
Chair Barnhart, if I could add, Representative Bueller, I think the issue is that in the natural supply and demand, there is demand that's naturally going to be able to pay for it. The service and the costs are there, are sufficiently low now that there's not an incentive needed to actually deploy that gigabit service. That was originally the fear, that we couldn't get gigabit. We can get gigabit in Oregon without the incentive, because of the other, just the cost, the taxes in Oregon aren't cost prohibitive. It was originally put in because it was considered cost prohibitive because of our tax structure, and the cost of gigabit fiber. The costs for gigabit fiber optic service are no longer such that it's cost prohibitive to actually provide it in Oregon. That's the reason.
The but for has gone away?
Correct.
Is that the premise? Okay.
Yep. So please, go ahead.
Maybe I misunderstood your testimony, but you said that John Day doesn't have it, and there's probably no expectation they would. So that seems inconsistent with the dropping cost of providing the service.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, the reason John Day won't get it is the incentive is written in a way that you don't have to provide it to rural Oregon. You could get the exemption if you provide it to a majority of customers, and it counts the Valley and others. And the incentive would have to be totally rewritten to get it out for the existing companies to get it out there. And that's what we're saying. We need to come up with a different method than the structure we had before. We think it's worth trying to figure out how to get broadband service to rural Oregon. It's just this method doesn't work.
Yeah.
So if this is beneficial and this method doesn't work, why completely overturn it without creating a new incentive structure which would bring this technology to the citizens of Oregon?
Chairman, Representative Bueller, I think we are open to an alternative method. This one was complicated by using both the PUC and the Department of Revenue. It was trying to target a particular company with a particular technology, and the technologies keep changing. So we feel like we need to relook at how we would even craft an incentive, because the companies and technology are continuing to change. We need to figure out a way that also dovetails with federal law as well in this area, because there are rural incentives, and we never just explored those issues as this rolled out quickly to try to address a need that was happening very fast. And so it's really making sure we get it right. Last time it was a push because of the data center issues and the potential to get Google Fiber to Portland, and those haven't panned out. So we want to make sure we get it right this time.
Please. Sorry to keep on dominating, but this is interesting. And then, so what did comparable cities like Seattle and Denver do to attract Google Fiber that the city of Portland did that wasn't able to attract Google Fiber?
Do we know the answer to that question?
Representative Barnhart, or Chair Barnhart, excuse me, Representative Bueller, I cannot speak to any incentives that either of those cities may have offered, but I do want to clarify that the announcement of Google providing gigabit service in those cities is with the newer technology, not the older Google Fiber fiber optic model. So it's with essentially using wireless antennas to provide that service.
Representative Vance?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to carry on the same theme, to perhaps suggest an answer to Representative Buehler's question. Perhaps it's the real issue is central assessment and the gargantuan intangible value of these huge companies and their lack of enthusiasm for having that exposed to our central assessment tax methodology, which is higher than almost every place else in the nation. So the question would be to the two of you, should we do something in anticipation of people perhaps not showing up here because of that tax devise, that tax approach? Are you worried for the cities? Are you worried for the counties that we won't enjoy some of the services these large institutions provide, given their massive amount of intangible value?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, we haven't heard from industry that's the reason. It's, as I said, technology is changing quicker, and it seems to be more about population and how to get it out to rural Oregon. And we did put the cap on it last session of capping intangibles. Certainly, we are different than other states, and it's a long-term issue. But so far, we haven't heard a company say, "Well, we'll come to Oregon if you do X, Y, and Z." We haven't seen that but for yet. So I understand the concern, but we haven't seen that link up for why we don't have the service. Companies are expanding already. It's just not the service that we anticipated this exemption was needed for.
Follow up?
You want to follow up? I think you may have said it, but you said you haven't seen companies that are not coming here by virtue of our failure to offer the incentive. I guess the other side of it is, are companies not coming here because of the central assessment that you know of, approach to how we manage their taxes?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I'm not aware of that as the reason. Yeah.
Some of these corporations have giant amounts of intangible property as compared to their tangible property because of the nature of the business. Okay. The limitation of 130% of historic tangible costs, I think, was intended to cover that issue. Is that your understanding as well?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, yes. That one was really written to deal with the technological IT, IP type companies that we were afraid we weren't going to be getting. That was the reason we put the cap in. We haven't seen what those numbers look like yet in terms of how much revenue we've lost because of that cap, because it's such a new exemption. And so that's another reason why we would prefer to repeal the gigabit exemption now and see how this plays out. It's still so new than that cap on intangibles.
Representative Nellis?
I think between the questions the two of you answered, my question's been answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hernandez?
So to my understanding, the original intent of this law was to try to bring in Google Fiber to our state, and the larger goal to bring in innovative data service. Does this exemption currently, is it prohibiting any type of new technology that we could be bringing in to meet that goal?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Hernandez, it's not prohibit. I mean, we're open for business. It's just a question of whether the tax code makes it cost prohibitive, and we think adding that cap and providing the franchise exemption and the FCC license exemption, that those go a long ways towards lowering the taxes, because those are the two largest assets of these types of companies. So, you know, again, we're open to discussions of how to improve the tax code at some point for a company that may need some other incentive. But right now, we think the incentives are appropriate to also balance the existing types of technology and not, you know, create disparity between the different types of companies and how they deliver their services. Each company seems to have a different method. And so we don't want to provide an incentive for one type of company over another existing company. We heard, you know, criticism of that, of providing too much of an incentive for one type of service method, and so we're trying to keep that balance as well.
Other questions? Representative Buehler.
Question. Thank you, Chair Barnhart. So there was discussion before you all took your testimony about if this would be retroactive either from House Bill 2067 or was it 2770? Yeah. 2770. In your opinion, would this retroactively remove the central assessment exemption?
Chair Barnhart, Representative.
Kyle, do you want to answer that question?
Sure.
He's asking a technical question about the bill. And if I understood the question correctly, it was, does this remove the 130% cap? No?
No.
Or are you asking something else?
Yeah. Would it remove the exemption that was produced in 2016 to the central assessment?
16 hours.
Yes, Rep. Bueller, House Bill 2770, yes, would remove it, and it goes back to the previous tax year, so it is a retroactive removal.
So there would be a liability generated from that retroactive exemption for the...
It's... Well, as was discussed in the informational hearing, and the League of Oregon Cities brought it up, there is ongoing litigation related to that on whether a company has actually, as of right now, no company has received the exemption.
Right. But
that's being disputed for that 1 year. So
that's open to debate right now in the courts.
Yes, Representative, and it's probably a better question. I spoke with Ledge Counsel a little bit about this as well as there is some case law, they can probably explain it better, the ability of the legislature to go back and make changes retroactively. So I would allow Ledge Counsel to have that full discussion, but it is something they said that is allowed and it's in the case law they reviewed.
So assuming that case is decide in a way that it can be retroactively applied and generate a liability, what would that do to the City of Portland's ability to attract future technology companies to invest large amount of capital in similar services?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, I'm not quite clear what would do to affect the city's ability to do that?
If there is a decision to retroactively remove the exemption and generate a large liability, what would that do to the City of Portland's ability to attract future similar investments in such technology?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, and I think a key fact of this particular situation is that no company has actually received this exemption. So the retroactivity is specific to that circumstance, and it's an important consideration.
And I saw another hand, I think. No? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Samuel Pastrick, Daniel Morris, and Seamus Linsky, please. Gentlemen, thank you for coming today.
Trio of order. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, committee members. My name is Samuel Pastrick, and I'm here with Oregon Citizens Utility Board. I'm a consumer advocate with CUB. As you folks probably know, CUB is a statewide advocacy organization for residential utility customers. More often than not, our legislative work targets protections for customers of investor-owned energy utilities. Yet, we also have a very real stake in advocating for accessible and affordable telecom services, so that's why I'm here today. Much like landline telephone decades ago, access to broadband today is really essential. It's an essential utility service, we would argue. I'm not really here today to relitigate either the legislative intent behind Senate Bill 611 or the subsequent rulemaking made at PUC to implement those portions. I also want to make very clear that I'm not a tax expert like Wendy. Nor does CUB have an opinion or really a public stance on or expertise with regard to state revenue issues. So I just want to get that out of the way. We do have an opinion. CUB does have an opinion when these issues do affect residential broadband customers. So it's in that context that we offer some questions and comments to help you folks evaluate proposed House Bills 2063 and 2770. So whereas the bill, well, 2770, would repeal relevant portions of Senate Bill 611, those codified in Oregon revised statutes, I believe it's 308-677 to 308-681, 2063 would, as we just heard, would amend the criteria, basically amend the criteria around and process by which the PUC determines a qualified gigabit project. So while CUB does not implicitly disagree with the approach to amend, we would suggest that the committee consider the following when evaluating the advantages of either amending or repealing those relevant statutes. So first, we recommend that the committee consider as to whether the current tax incentive has actually driven providers to create new projects. That's a really important point. Or have projects come forward in response to growing consumer demand and or general market force. Another question is, would such projects occur absent the current incentive? Evidence suggests, I would argue, that they probably would. A good example here is that it's been widely reported, especially recently, that a major provider may, in fact, roll out symmetrical gigabit service using existing infrastructure, cable infrastructure in particular. Second, based on our tracking of industry trend, we agree with PUC staff analysis outlined on page 12 of the symmetrical gigabit exemption report. That's the report that was given, I believe, a couple of weeks ago, suggesting that if Fiber...
Is that report in OLIS?
Yeah. I believe it is.
I just haven't been able to find it in the list.
Well,
please go ahead, and I will find it.
It's on page 12 of the report. At least that's what I wrote down. The PUC report suggests that if Google Fiber were to attempt reentry into the Oregon broadband market, they would probably more likely than not take a much less costly and less infrastructure-intensive fixed wireless approach, as was just discussed, as opposed to the fiber to the home, that approach envisioned during Senate Bill 611 adoption. So I would argue that this raises the question as to whether the relevant portions of 611, even with the proposed amendments outlined in 2063, are really still necessary to entice such a move. Since future technology, and we just heard a lot about technology, since future technology may take yet another turn, it very likely will take another turn, CUB believes that a much more prudent approach, a more prudent course, is to just eliminate those statutes altogether. So that would be the 2770 approach. You know, when it comes down to it, CUB really does appreciate the intent behind 2063 because it targets really a concern that we have about broadband service accessibility and affordability. However, we would really caution that broadband deployment technology may in fact outpace and therefore render completely ineffective the proposed amendments outlined in 2063. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Daniel Morris. I'm here on behalf of A Better Oregon to urge your support for House Bill 2770 and your no vote on House Bill 2063. A Better Oregon is a coalition that is fighting for adequate funding for education, for health care, public health, services for seniors, really kind of across the board, all the critical services and schools that Oregonians depend on. And, you know, our schools and our public services have really been underfunded for many years. And the reason is that for many years, Oregon has had the country's lowest corporate taxes. And the way I see it is that we can have the country's lowest corporate taxes or we can have well-funded schools and services, but we can't have both. You heard in this committee last week in a presentation from the Legislative Revenue Office that Oregon is one of the top corporate welfare states. We give out a lot of tax breaks, and I think with these two bills in front of you today, there's really a choice that's in front of this committee. The first is that you can decide to give. What will probably end up being tens of millions of dollars in additional tax breaks over into the future, to corporations like Comcast, which made over $8 billion in profits last year and is currently has about over $145 million of unpaid Oregon property taxes. Or you can affirm that corporations, that internet service providers should pay taxes like other Oregon businesses, and so that we can have the funds that we need to fund our schools and our public services. And so, for us, the choice is clear. So I just wanted to close to say, thank you for your hard work on this committee. I know it's a tough environment we're in right now. We're really looking to you to find a solution to raise not only over $1.5 billion to meet kind of not just to maintain our current sort of inadequate service levels, but also to find additional revenues to actually make those investments in our schools and in our services that really benefit all Oregonians. And so thank you for prioritizing Oregon's people over corporate profits. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Shem Slinsky. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Consumer League, and I'm here today to urge the committee to vote yes on HB 2770 to eliminate the gigabit tax break, and to vote no on HB 2063, the amendments to the gigabit tax break. We think that in this current budget environment, when you're facing over a $1.5 billion budget shortfall, now is not the time to be giving tax breaks to multi-billion-dollar corporations. As has been presented a couple times today, the technology is constantly evolving, and to codify a tax break for a specific technology seems short-sighted. Now, the goal, of course, of providing customers in rural Oregon broadband internet service is one that the Oregon Consumer League, it's important to us as well, but we don't think that HB 2063 is the right tool for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Probably I should have asked the last panel. Sorry, there was one down here. Representative Hernandez.
This may be a stupid question.
Please.
I feel like I'll get away with it since I'm new. But this is a question for Dr. Daniel. Do you know the amount of profits that these corporations that are trying to get the exemption get or have in this state?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Hernandez. So the short answer is that we know for public companies like Comcast their total kind of national or sort of their global profits, that because they report those to their shareholders and to the SEC. They are not required to report the amount of profits that they make on a per state. So we don't actually know how much in profits Comcast is making in Oregon. We also, aside from their property taxes, we don't know how much they are paying in other kinds of taxes in Oregon. We don't have a strong disclosure law to enable that information to be available to you or to the public.
Yep, that's a different bill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a different bill.
I shouldn't comment this, but what?
Go ahead.
Why would we make an exemption if we don't know that information?
I assume you're referring to Senate Bill 611.
Yes, probably.
Yes, thank you. Other questions for this panel? I think it's not clear, because we have several new members, what this issue is really about. It is about, isn't it, how much property tax the companies in this sector with this exception pay. Can you describe, I think some of you know this, what these property taxes are spent on by the recipients of them and who those recipients are? In general, sure. I don't need the details.
Sure. Chair Barnhart, yes, this is probably a better question for the previous panel, but in general, about half property taxes go to education. Most of that's K-12, and then a smaller share to community colleges. They also go to to cover other local government, police, fire departments, water service districts. There's libraries, you know, the Historical Society in Multnomah County. So there's a whole range of local government services that are supported through property taxes.
Right. I'm trying to get to the motivation for people to oppose, why people would come forward to oppose this tax break, because tax breaks generally people think of as are pretty nice things. But there's a consequence from reducing taxes on other people. Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to remind everyone, we passed this.
We did.
This whole outfit up here voted for it, I think, if I recall correctly. So this, we're not debating whether or not this thing should be passed. It has been passed, and now we're debating what to do about it in light of advances in technology. But that gets me to my question. And these companies, large as they may be, have generated things that are of huge value to us. And without them, our state would be in the Stone Age. And so thank God for high-speed internet. Now, it happens that speeds of the internet in California and Washington are both higher than here in Oregon. Why could that be? Why should that be? What we want to be doing, I think all of us agree, is designing a system that encourages that, as opposed to beating up on those who provide these services. They're easy targets. So easy, I think our time would be better spent talking about something else, like how to design the system that works better. Mm-hmm. So just saying, if you guys could help us enormously, if you would come in with those kinds of suggestions, because we've heard the other half a lot more than I think most of us enjoy, because it's wasting our time. So come up with some good stuff that will help us move this thing forward in a way that advances the interests of our state, particularly when it comes to educating the kids, because they really do need the internet. So just saying.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, there's no question in there. I just couldn't stand it any longer.
Thank you, Representative Vance. I completely agree. If we came up with a method to actually get broadband out to John Day and other places, that would be wonderful, and I think we can ask for help to get there. I think the testimony so far we've heard is that this isn't the vehicle to do that, or the 611 isn't. Representative Nels, please.
I just kind of playing off what Representative Ben said. What I'm struggling with is, you know, why do we do a tax incentive? It's because the private market is not incentivizing a behavior that we want to have happen, and so we, the state, either give a break, which is kind of like giving a loan, to make something happen, all right? And so the question for me is like, I understand high-speed internet is a good thing to have, and do we need to incentivize it in this way to get it? Will the market take care of it eventually? Is it worth having super awesome high-speed internet to the detriment of having better funded police and fire, or, you know, more teachers? Or, I mean, that is what we're trying to weigh here, and I'm not sure yet, right? That's what I'm trying to listen to here. You know, I'm just not clear if we need to do this. You know, what I remember about voting about Senate Bill 611, and unfortunately, is that it was about trying to make it so that our intangibles tax wasn't so ridiculous and so high that nobody would come here. I got to be honest with you, I don't remember this gigabyte exemption in the bill, unfortunately. And if I had been paying slightly better attention, I might have voted differently on it, actually. I don't know. But I think we get into a weird space here where we try to create an exemption for one company and one behavior, and we have an unintended consequence.
Thank you. Let's go on and hear from the other witnesses before we determine what we're going to do on the bill. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for your testimony. Mike Dewey and Brent Wolf, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Dewey on behalf of the Oregon Cable Telecom Association, representing companies such as Ben Broadband, a somewhat rural company, Crestview Cable, very rural, Way Broadband, somewhat rural, Charter Communications, a predominant national company, primarily in rural Oregon, Cable One, and Comcast. And I'm not here to speak for Comcast today. I do want to set the record straight on two parts. A Better Oregon mentioned the unpaid taxes of Comcast. Comcast has paid every single bill delivered to their mailbox. Now, we have a deferred billing system. I'm not going to get into that. But they paid every single bill they've been asked to pay, number one. The Consumer League mentioned that this was a bill that spoke to a single technology or a specific technology. It does not on the 1 gig. However, you can deliver the service and you meet the criteria, you qualify. Now, for some of you, you know, in 1973, I was actually in the room when we had the conversation about central assessment. And telephone companies were centrally assessed, and it would be a misnomer to do that today because they were a monopoly and rate regulated. Telephone companies face tremendous competition. And what we had in 1973, and DOR brought to the attention of the committee, a new technology that MCI, which was bought by Verizon a little bit later, a technology that delivered a microwave service primarily from bank to bank rather than paper being transmitted by rail, by car, whatever, flight. This was a service, a microwave service. And the committee felt that that should be, this is 1973, ought to be centrally assessed. Now, remember, centrally assessment, on the one hand, is the Department of Revenue doing the assessment. And we have, as a cable industry, no issues with that with complex properties. The other part, though, when you take the communication side of 308, ORS 308, and you added the words data transmission by whatever means. Mm-hmm. And so in 2009, the Department of Revenue started assessing not just Comcast, but data companies. And it was a discrete subset of companies. But all of the cable companies that I represent were centrally assessed. Now, data centers are a different animal. In 611, you exempted data centers. They were exempt anyway by virtue of the interpretation by the Department of Revenue that they were not data companies transmitting data. The internet provider or the broadband provider was the entity that was the transmission company, therefore centrally assessed. So that happened in 1973. Now, obviously, when I was in the hearing, and I was there for another client, I started representing the association in 1975. Cable companies were only providing video service. Today, they provide telephone service, high-speed broadband service, and in Oregon and across the country, they are the largest provider in rural, suburban, and urban Oregon in the country. There were two attempts in the late 90s and early 2000s by the legislature to centrally assess cable companies. Those bills did not pass. So there was a discussion at that point in time. But based, I believe, on the AG's opinion, the DOR felt that they could, in 2009, start centrally assessing cable companies. Ms. Johnson's correct. That was litigated. It took quite some time to litigate whether or not cable companies were in and out. And we prevailed at the tax court. Unfortunately, the big court, the Supreme Court, disagreed, and DOR prevailed. So we are clearly subject to centrally assessment. In 2015, I told this committee and the Senate committee that Oregon is an outlier. And if you go apples to apples and you take this stock debt approach entirely, only Arkansas and Oregon take intangibles to the limit that no other state does, trying to get an apples-to-apples comparison. It's my understanding that Arkansas has now phased out and continues to phase out the taxation of intangibles, looking for a favorable business climate. Also, I want to remind the committee, notwithstanding the intangible taxation that occurs here, And especially for Comcast, which was huge, the 2008 bill compared to 2009, and as Ms. Johnson indicated, that is still being litigated. And it's a big deal for cities. It's a big deal for Comcast, and others are in the queue to have that same conversation. And we haven't finished that at this point in time. So that's still out there in terms of the litigation at the tax court. Tax court has made some decisions. I won't go into those. You can read the, I think it's September 16, 2016, opinion from the tax court. But I want to remind the committee that these cable companies that I represent also pay franchise fee on video service, usually 5%. Between 5% and 7% of the telephone revenues, because they provide telephone, voice over internet, and in Eugene now a 7% access fee on broadband, which was litigated, and unfortunately we did not prevail, so we're not doing very well in the courts. But this is millions of dollars over and above property taxes that the cities are collecting for the privilege tax. Now I do want to say that the application fee to get certified by the PUC was $50,000. So that's a fairly significant amount of money to be put in play and now have that go away. So Google, and I'll get into Google in a minute, Frontier and Comcast applied for the exemption and were certified by the PUC. As Ms. Johnson noted, no company today has received any benefit from Senate Bill 611. Now, from the Comcast point of view, that's being litigated because we think the language is pretty straightforward that you get the exemption. Department of Revenue disagrees. That's why you have lawsuits. But it was $50,000. And Frontier has spent money to get into the game to ultimately get the exemption, and I think Brent will talk about that. We thought that this was a good way of enticing investment. It's good for the consumer. You want more competition in the marketplace. People want 1 gig, and this was an elegant way of going about doing that. So Comcast has invested approximately over 15 and 16, $167 million. I don't know what Frontier has invested, with the idea that this exemption would be approved. That's a lot of money.
Can you say that again, that number again, Mike?
$167 million. So I want to say that this, after 2 years of repealing a bill where you almost have a contract between the company enticing them to do something where the state is an outlier, We don't think that's the right way to go. It doesn't send the right message. Are we going to do this with other legislation down the road? Can it be improved? Sure, it could be improved. There's no question about it. But we think it's not the time to do that. Now, the companies that I represent weren't ready to be able to get before the PUC and be able to prove that they could provide a 1 gig exemption. They just weren't ready. But here is a piece of legislation that is before you that's on the books today, and they might take advantage of it. I don't know. I don't make those business decisions for those companies. Most of those companies are national companies. The capital is allocated where the best return on investment is. And I know for some companies, if you take their prescriber amount that they have to pay for fees and taxes, it's higher than other states. We want better schools, we want better roads, we want better universities, we want better health care, but we're doing our part in terms of paying for that, and we continue to make investments. I want to say one more thing in terms of the other bill, which appears in the advocates for 2770 don't support. It is fraught with a number of problems, objective problems you have in terms of what is the adequate investment. And I say that because you might have a small company and a smaller footprint where their investment would be smaller than a larger company. And I represent both small and large companies. And then you'd be the first state to have rate regulation. And I don't think you have rate regulation where you have competition in the marketplace. It just doesn't work. It doesn't fit to get a return on your investment. So outright, 2063 has substantial problems. We're willing to have a conversation about how to fix 611, but we don't think it's time to do away with the entire program after 2 years. So I'll stop at the – oh, one more thing. I hadn't intended to do this, but Google. I don't think there's any question that the committee on the Senate that started this looked at it and said, you know, we've got a problem with our system in terms of intangibles. And Google pointed that out, just paraphrasing. And they're kind of the golden globe, so to speak. Everybody wanted Google to come to their community. And they pointed out that, you know, we need to have a fix here, and 1 gig is where we want to go. And it's, and understand me, it wouldn't be just, there'd be lower offerings. You can't do it just on a 1 gig offering economically. But Google now, rightly so, is looking at a wireless play to provide 1 gig. I don't know what they're going to do as they look to Oregon. But one of the issues everybody has in wireless is there's not enough hotspots or antennas to provide all of the over-the-top infrastructure that needs to occur. So just by virtue of Google coming here, there's going to be a lot of permitting issues. And we have the same thing for our over-the-top plays that Comcast have, Charter has, in terms of being able to get to the Internet anywhere, everywhere, if you're a cable customer. But I would submit without some sort of fix on intangibles, and the 1 gig does that because that's where they want to go, they might look at Oregon and say, we're not coming here first, second, or third, because their intangibles, in terms of that value, intrinsic value, is going to be much higher than if we take Comcast, just in terms of their stock versus debt, and when you take into consideration the goodwill, their patents, and their workforce. Name brand. So you're not fixing anything, in my mind, in terms of investments by repealing 611, and that's essentially what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. We represent wireline telephone companies, basically. Mike's association represents the cable companies. We have no wireless members. We are strictly wireline facilities-based telecommunications companies. We're opposed to both of these bills, and as Mike mentioned earlier, this is not some theoretical concern that we have. Senate Bill 611 was passed. One of our member companies took advantage of that bill, made an investment in Washington County in their network to upgrade their network to be able to apply for this project, for this asymmetrical gig project. They paid the $50,000 fee, did all their internal work, all the engineering they had to do, whatever they needed to do, submitted their project to the PUC. It was reviewed, approved. They made their investment in Oregon. The project was completed in December. The tax break is imminent as of April, I believe, is what they told me, and now this entire proceeding threatens that, and they're concerned with it for obvious reasons. I'm not going to belabor anything that Mr. Dewey has already said. I want to be respectful, Mr. Chair, of you and the committee for having this hearing, but frankly, in our opinion, this represents nothing other than bad faith on the part of the legislature. A bill was passed, they took advantage of it, and now we are contemplating, or at least discussing, taking that back, rolling it backwards. I don't speak for Frontier Communications directly. They've been named here, so I'll name them. But I can tell you that if Senate Bill 611, if the goal of that was to provide incentive, it worked. It provided the incentive. They made the investment. This proceeding is having the opposite effect, and is having a dampening effect, a chilling effect on any future investment that they might choose to make here in this state. And I think, I mean, I have some comments about central assessment and intangibles and things of that nature, but I think Mike covered that all. We don't need to hear that again. So just be respectful of your time and any other witnesses that might want to come up. I think I'll just summarize my statement by saying we're opposed to these again, and we urge the committee not to consider these bills any further than you're doing today, and certainly don't pass them out to the full House for their consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Smith, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm trying to get my arms around. I'm new to this committee and new to this conversation. I'm trying to get my arms around what was the rationale from the Oregon Department of Revenue on declining or not approving the application. Because, Mr. Dew, if I heard you correctly, Comcast thought they were eligible. They completed the application. They submitted the fee and then were at some point informed that they did not qualify. I'm trying to figure out what was the disqualifying rationale. I don't know if staff can help me with that. Is there a neutral entity that can share with me?
Well, let me know
what occurred.
Let me know that the issue is under litigation, and so people's answer to the question might be with that in mind. But if you want to take a shot at it, please do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, and I understand where the department is coming from a communication standpoint. For whatever reason, and there hasn't been a discussion per se, a letter, as I understand. If there was, I don't know about it. But basically, it was going to be business as usual, probably recognizing that there would be litigation, which there is. And why would you have a conversation
but just before that? And again, I understand litigation, but somebody had to receive a disqualifying letter saying, for the following reason, your application has been declined. Has anyone seen this letter?
Mr. Chair, I don't think there is a letter. And Department of Revenue is best. PUC and DOR is thinking. PUC has their part, certification, and we have our part. And we made a decision.
Just follow up, and then I'll let this go because maybe I'm not understanding. But traditionally, when someone files an application and they submit their fee, they receive some form of correspondence that says, "For congratulations," or "Unfortunately." Where's the unfortunate letter? Or has there just been no communication between the Department of Revenue and the company?
I think we ought to leave it at that. Because I can't speak for the DOR.
I think for the time being. And I would suggest that if you're interested in the controversy and what the controversy is about, you might want to consult the public record for the March 1st, 2016 hearing before the PUC and my testimony there. Okay. And I'm not going to say any more about it than that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to go down, pal. I'm just trying to get my arms around the issue.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Smith-Warner and then Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this may be a part of the whole litigation or something, but one of the things I was struck by, Mr. Wolf, is that you said that Frontier, the law passed, and then they said, okay, we're going to make this investment. They made the application, then they went out, got it approved, and then went out and did the work and physically did the work.
Yes.
Is that the same way it works? So you said $167 million, Mr. Dewey, from Comcast, that they, so was it also after the bill was passed, they then went out and did the application, then did $167 million worth of new investment just for, to establish where this gig?
Well, I can't speak for Comcast. I can only tell you what the number is. But this was an inducement, there's no question about it, for them to look at Oregon.
Okay, that's not exactly an answer. But again, I'm trying to get a sense of it's the cause and effect. I'm trying to get a sense in trying to figure this out. Was there a cause and effect there of that investment?
Mr. Chair and Representative, Comcast would continue to make investments in Oregon because there's competition in the marketplace.
Okay.
I would suggest that they have made larger contributions because of this bill. There was a lot of attention focused on Oregon by Comcast as to what's going on here. And so they were trying to fix it.
Well, and perhaps Comcast will come forward then and show us their investments in Oregon over the last several years and show us how this investment is a significant departure from that. They're not here, so we can't ask them directly. But perhaps they'll come forward and offer that information to the committee to establish the point you're attempting to make. Is that enough for now on this topic? Thank you. Representative Bentz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you just asked my ask a question. I'm going to put in my words, but I think it's the same. It would be, obviously, what we're doing here is kind of akin to our view of tax credit issues every 3 years or 6 years, or however we set them up. This is a little quicker than normal. But it would be helpful, I think, for all of us if we could see some of the numbers on how much has been invested, and then also how much probably won't be paid in the form of taxes. So we can compare the two. That would help. I think that's what you just said. I think that's what we're all kind of saying.
Yeah, and let me expand on that just a little bit. The claim is being made that this investment, I think, I mean, you didn't say this directly, but I think the claim is that Comcast invested $167 million for the gigabit system that they're planning to put in. I think that would be useful for us to figure out whether that's accurate or not. I think your point that they are continuing to invest in Oregon as part of the fact that they are in a competitive environment is probably very accurate, and the question I would have is how much of this $167 million is actually different from what they would have invested anyway without this. And I'm sure you don't have that data today, but it sure would be nice to have that. I note, for example, that when Frontier came to see me, and I apologize, I don't remember the names of the people who came to see me, they indicated that they had invested $2 million in the Washington County area in reliance on this bill. And yet I note that Frontier has invested $118.7 million in capital expenditures between 2012 and 2015 in Oregon on engineering initiatives, improving network infrastructure for residents and commercial customers in a number of counties, including Washington County. So, I think these claims are interesting. It would be really useful to get the actual numbers and to be able to see for ourselves how much of the expenditures that they made are essentially usable for a gigabit, not for anything else, and how much they invested for this particular issue and not for anything else. Not for anything else that they would have invested in. Anyway, also we'll note in passing that the CEO's salary for Frontier Communications is $2.04 million a year, just as a matter of way of comparing the size of the business. It's a very large business that does business in a large, large percentage of the total number of states in the United States. I'm going to defer to Representative Fernandez, and then I have several other questions. Representative Fernandez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. If I'm understanding this right, businesses in Oregon, particularly those that deal with communications that are intangible, that we have an intangible problem, can you elaborate? Like, do you... For example, my intent in asking that question is, how do we get Google, for example, to bring in the newest innovative form of technology? Do you have solutions for us in terms of how do we fix our central assessment? What kind of system should we have that works? That also provides the resources for our local governments in terms of schools and police and...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hernandez, again, I'm trying to pass the buck here. That's Google in terms of the conversation with Google. We do have a structural problem with intangibles compared to other states. You know, it's literally... Now, we're talking about companies that are providing the transmission. So we want to make sure and you want competition to be able to decide which company you want to have as your internet access provider so that you can go anywhere on the web and you can have the video product or you can choose not to have it. But I think everybody wants competition because competition should lower prices if there's enough supply out there. But our major point that we're trying to make is, you know, after 2 years, let's see what happens in terms of investments that continue to be made here for companies that might have large intangibles. And a wireless play is a great play. It's not going to get early on the scope that you're going to want to compete with some of the other companies, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Dewey. Can I?
Yeah, please follow up. Yeah.
This is actually for Frontier. Would you all have invested in Oregon whether this exemption exists or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hernandez, thank you so much for asking that question. The figure that you mentioned earlier, Mr. Chair, about the total investment in the network, Frontier serves, and I'll get to you directly, sir, in some pretty remote parts of the state, MNAHA, places like that, that it's very, very expensive to serve, and they have to invest in the network statewide, wherever they serve. Okay. To get to your question, sir, and I think they expressed this to you, Mr. Chair, in your office, but for this bill, it's not anywhere near what Comcast invested. It was a $2 million investment, and absent this bill, they would not have invested that $2 million. I won't apologize for that. I think anybody would be happy to have a $2 million investment in their neighborhood or their town or their district. And I don't want to miss the point here that they made the investment and they think they are due this tax incentive, and to take it away from them now just is just wrong. So I hope that answers your question.
If I might add just quickly, so the numbers, 167, 2, 3 million or whatever, you get footprints are different. The intricacies of the bill are such that you need to provide the offering to 50% of your customers. So it's a larger territory to be able to do that. That's just why the numbers are different, too.
Maybe a follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is that a yes or no?
That's a good question, too. They would not have made that investment absent this bill.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that is what they claimed in my office.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Because they're consistent. And the next is Representative Buehler, please.
Thanks, Chair Barnhart. Just a comment and then a question. I think Representative Nose made a very insightful I see wisdom. I call it out. I think his point was well taken. Is that, you know, we just don't have the transparency in regards to the, you know, amount of investment over what would be standard practice without the exemption. What is the value of the exemption present day and in the future? And then what is the importantly, what's the return on that investment, not only for the company, but more importantly for the citizens we represent? I haven't seen that. I'd love to see that.
Thank you.
Attainable? I mean, I don't know how we make that decision.
Well, you've encapsulated several of my questions, and I really appreciate that.
I mean, those are the questions, because any of these tax credits, we have to be able to justify the return, at least in my mind. And I just don't see the data to justify
either
taking them away, extending, maybe making them more.
Right? You'd like some numbers?
Right?
You'd like some numbers, I think. Did I understand that correctly?
And I don't think necessarily CEO salaries are...
No, I agree with you.
We pay football coaches millions through a pension.
More than
plan.
That. We do.
But we make a lot of... but I would love to see that information.
And your question, I think, is much better phrased than mine, and I appreciate it.
Well, the wisdom of Representative Nose rubbed off on me.
You've got a challenge from Representative Buehler.
Sure.
We would love to see the numbers of the sort that he has suggested we ought to know in order to make decisions about this kind of an issue.
Mr. Chair and Representative.
And of course, that doesn't mean you have to give them to us right now. I'd be surprised if you had them right
now.
Wait
a sec, let me see.
But bringing them soon would be a useful thing.
What we'll do is have a sidebar with a few folks. It's Comcast has those, and in some of this, trust me, because we had this proceeding at the PUC about what was going to be provided to the PUC in terms of investments, what would be redacted, just so long as your competition doesn't get all, you know, your game plan. Where are you going to provide new fiber and new services? And so there are some trade secrets that but we'll figure out a way to have a conversation to see if we can help. Again, Comcast, Frontier, distill that.
And the companies have to decide, of course, how much information they're willing to provide in order to satisfy Representative Buehler's curiosity and, frankly, mine.
And please take into consideration that they are hiring and continue to hire people in this state. Jobs are very well paid. And so it's not just this. It's about the economic engine for the state of Oregon.
You just want
yes, please, yeah.
And I'm just confused because I think Wendy's testified that there has been no investment that's generated exemption of any value, but you're saying there is. So just that basic fact.
Well, the difference is heretofore, because Frontier hadn't made the investments, they weren't eligible for the gigabit exemption on intangibles. Comcast believed because they were certified by the PUC they would get the exemption and the appraisal would be different. It did not change. Therefore, Comcast hasn't, based on the 1 gigabit exemption, paid less in taxes because it wasn't provided to them through DOR. So they thought they were going to get it. They didn't get it.
I'm getting more confused now.
Okay, I'm going to go to Representative Marsh, and then Representative Nose, and then Representative Johnson.
Yeah, the speaker just thank you, Mr. Chair. The speaker just pointed out an issue that I think that I wanted to focus some attention to, because I think it's a legitimate question to say, have companies really invested in anticipation of something that then we then pull the rug out from underneath? But in the most recent Gigabyte report that we got, the PUC's analysis showed that about the companies that had applied to that point, including Frontier, that only Comcast even made the first cut. So basically there was only one potential that had even made the kinds of investment that warranted PUC handing, basically validating that application to revenue. So we haven't met that threshold yet.
Mm-hmm. If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Morris, if I'm unhearing what you're saying, I'll state it again. Frontier applied, paid the $50,000 fee, submitted their project, it was approved, and they made their investment. They are awaiting the tax benefit. The project just finished in December, so they haven't realized it yet. That's their fear. They've made the investment. They've done their part, and now the state of Oregon is backing away from its part. So, if you're thinking, and I'll put words in your mouth, if you're thinking no project is qualified for this, that's not quite true. They haven't received the benefit yet. Just it's a matter of timing is what it is. It just hasn't happened yet.
So are you saying it's in the tax year to come that we haven't yet looked at, that the PUC hasn't yet looked at?
That's correct. They made their investment in 2016, and they haven't been assessed yet for 2016.
And Comcast made their investments for certification in 2015.
That's the argument made.
Yeah, there's no litigation around Frontier's project at all.
I know.
So
it's not ripe.
I think you said not ripe.
It's not ripe.
Right. Okay. Oh, thank you. Making sure I heard it correctly. Representative Nels, please.
I think Representative Morris kind of asked my question. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for your strong testimony. Mike, could you help us understand more about the application process with the PUC? There's a $50,000 exchange, right? In exchange for putting that down, what kind of implication is involved in that transactional relationship?
Mr. Conway from the PUC is here, and he can speak better to it, but I'll give you an overview. The $50,000 is split between DOR and the Oregon PUC.
Oh, right. Okay.
And the PUC had to do most of the work because they were promulgating a rule to figure out the mechanism by which you certified. And So at the end of the day, you had to, for Comcast, I won't speak to Frontier because it was a different scenario. At the end of the day, they had to prove that they met the technical requirements of providing the 1 gig asymmetrical.
As outlined in Senate Bill 611.
611.
Correct.
So they had, and so engineers from the OPUC came and looked at their facilities to see if you could deliver that. And actually, it's an offer now. Offer that to 50% of your broadband customers. And that was defined a little higher. I mean, the speeds were a little lower than we thought should be the speeds, which gave you a larger subset of, because it's a residential exemption. And so you had to do that. And then you had to also demonstrate that you were not going to provide a redlining program. In other words, only go to the high demographic income area that you were going to be providing it to all of the, if you will, neighborhoods within that, whatever footprint is. So those are requirements that are in the statute, and those were arguably met by Comcast, Google. Now, Google isn't here, so and they wouldn't be centrally assessed here today because they are not a data company. Under the definition from 73.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we can do it. Representative
Benz. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you refresh our memories again on the nature of the exemption? I'm going to state it is you avoid being centrally assessed, but you don't avoid paying taxes. So you can go back to that $2 million investment.
Yes,
I do. I have it right that if that was physical plant, you still pay normal everyday property taxes on the $2 million. You just don't get that central assessment intangible piece. I just want to refresh everybody's memory that you're still paying taxes. You're correct. Just not paying them at the centrally assessed rate.
I believe that's correct, yes. Frontier still
paying taxes. You're paying on your real and personal property.
Right, correct. Mm-hmm. And because that's easily lost here, that suddenly
yes,
nobody's paying any tax. I just want you to keep that in play.
Thank
See,
you
part of the discussion at the tax court has been the argument that since cable companies were centrally assessed, did their real and personal property come under the 3% limit? And DOR said, no, we're reassessing you. So all of that comes under the new formula. And that's still being litigated at this point. But they're still paying property taxes.
Representative Nose?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I think I just thought of something. Thank you. In addition to what their investment was, I'm curious as to what you charge the subscribers for the gigabit service that you're offering. Get it.
I believe Frontier and
yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, for Frontier, they indicate to me that it would be $300 for the gig per month.
Okay.
In a test phase that may or may not hold. It might be higher, might be lower, but that's what they're going to roll it out at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, I don't know exactly what the number is. All I know is that people are taking the 1 gig. And it's actually 2 gig, not 1 gig. The way it is set up, it's a 2 gig service, not a 1 gig mm-hmm. service.
Okay, but my point for asking this, Mr. Chair, is that as part of getting the exemption, it had to, I'm going to mess this up, but it had to be offered at a rate that a lot of people could manage, right? Wasn't that part of the deal? It had to be offered broad enough and at a rate that was,
yes.
you know, that people could afford. I'm sure that's not the technical word,
well.
But.
That was my argument in front of the PUC. The PUC, I think, as I understand their results, concluded that the bill didn't actually require any particular offer, that any offer of any sort for any amount of money would work.
I guess I
and I believe that was the holding.
Can somebody tell me what the statute said that we passed?
Do you have it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, I believe that's why 2063 has those blank spots in there
mm-hmm.
related to.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's your regulation.
Yeah, Kyle has the current law.
Project needs requires capital investment with respect to current service other than kind of infrastructure. Because of. Okay, so here's the thing. Small letter B, with respect to communication services offered by the company using the infrastructure, the company does not deny access to the communication services to any group of residential customer because of the income level of the residential customers in the local area in which the residential customer reside. So I guess it would be important for me to know what Google is charging, because I wonder if there's a nexus between what they charge and that phrase.
I don't think you mean Google. I think you mean the companies that actually
Comcast,
providing
I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah.
And I might just...
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's to prevent redlining, sir, and I think that's what that language is getting at, or some sort of redlining.
Right. There was a significant controversy before the PUC about the issue of the word offer. My view of the word offer was that it meant a real offer, not an offer at an exorbitant price. My understanding, based on the fact that the PUC approved the applications, was that they disagreed with me about the meaning of the statute. The letter from Portland indicates that Comcast has offered gigabit service at $4,600 for the first year. And I think that's $1,000 for the installation cost and $300 a month after that. And that certainly is the dollar amount that they had on their website on March 1st, 2016, that I looked up. And my view was that the statute required that a real offer be made and that it would actually apply to real people. Now, the Frontier people told me that they had service, they rolled out service, but they had zero customers, at least as of a few days ago. And now I'm hearing that Comcast actually has customers. Could you provide us with that number? And generally speaking, where they're located?
No, I will talk.
But you'll ask Comcast to provide that number.
Yes.
That would be helpful, because my bet is that it's a very, very small number of people based on the price that you're charging. We're going to have to break after these witnesses and come back on Monday to continue this public hearing. And I apologize to those who came today expecting to be heard, but we simply don't have time to do that. There's some additional questions that I'd like you to get information for us if you can, and that is the question of the total tax burden. You raised the issue of apples to apples, and I think Arkansas and Oregon. I think when we consider taxes, we normally, in making comparisons with other states, consider the taxes, all the taxes that a company pays in the state, in order to make a comparison between Oregon and other states. If you cherry pick a particular tax, of course, you can get any result you want, because you pick the one that proves your point. It would be useful for us if we had the total tax numbers for each state and how those compare across the state lines, because states provide taxes in different ways.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to be sure, the apples to apples is that the outliers were Arkansas and Oregon.
On the tax that you described.
On intangibles.
Right, and my interest is on the total taxes on the company in the states where it provides services, and how Oregon compares on that basis rather than on the basis of one particular tax. Other states have different taxes than we do, and we may not have any tax in the area that they charge taxes in.
Sales.
And I think we'll get some of that, I think, from Legislative Revenue Office, but if Comcast wants to provide additional information on that question, it would be helpful.
Yeah, as I recall, the last time we had this conversation in 2015, Comcast noted per customer what their fees and taxes were compared to other states.
Okay. Does that mean Frontier doesn't have to provide that information to you?
Oh, I think Frontier ought to provide it, too. Thank you for asking that important question. Thank you. I really, very much appreciate your testimony today. I'm not sure that we won't have additional things that we want to bring up next week. I still have several other people who want to be heard on this matter. We've taken all the time the committee has today. I apologize for not getting the others in. So we will carry over the public hearing on House Bill 2770 and House Bill 2063 to Monday, and so you can get it on the agenda. Thank you, gentlemen. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
With that, the committee is adjourned for today.